The following program was pre-recorded. On WFAN, it's time for Hello, My Name is Craig, our weekly candid conversation about gambling addiction. It's supported by the Council on Compulsive Gambling of New Jersey, 800-GAMBLER. Now, here's Craig Carton.
Good morning and welcome to another edition of Hello, My Name is Craig. Craig Carton with you for the next 30 minutes of frank, open, honest conversation about gambling addiction. And happy to have with me this morning a fellow gambler in recovery. This is Vinny. Vinny, good morning. How are you?
Hey, Craig. Good morning. I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Doing great. Appreciate you joining us here today. First question is the same every single week we do it, and that is, when was your last wager?
Yeah, sure. Vinny G, compulsive gambler, placed my last bet February 12th, 2022.
Awesome. All right. So you got a full 3 years under your belt recovery. Life must be very, very good.
Yeah, life is definitely getting better. I've had, you know, it's been a bit of roller coaster 3 years, you know, gambling a part of it, but other life events too. But yeah, I'm in a very good place now. And, you know, I know that without what I've been doing and without the help of the program and others in it, I would be nowhere near where I am today.
All right, let's tell your story to the people so they have an understanding of what you've been through. When you look back on life, were you first exposed to any kind of gambling, you know, way before it became a problem?
Yeah, for sure. I can go all the way back to being a kid, being 7 or 8 years old, and, you know, not pinning any of this on, you know, my family or my upbringing. I grew up in a very, very stable household. Both my parents had very good jobs, you know, grew up in a nice neighborhood on Long Island. Went to private school, we went on good vacations, right? Had a really good upbringing. And, but, you know, I remember being, like I said, about 7 or 8 years old and my dad being in his office sport pool, as we, you know, talk about in the yellow book. And, you know, he would pick games every week, right? Against the spread. And, you know, he did it in a way that was not compulsive, right? He was structured with it, and it was something that he did for fun, right? And I would help him, right? I'd sit there, I'd pick the games with him. That got me into watching sports and having something, you know, being invested in it to a certain extent, even though there was no, you know, financial gain for me at that point. I also remember being a kid and going to Atlantic City for my grandma's birthday. We went to Vegas a couple times, and I was enthralled by the casino, even, you know, at a young age. And I remember saying to myself, oh, I can't wait till I can go.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's lived in me for a long time. I mean, I could still remember feelings I got as a kid walking through the casino and not being able to, like, touch anything or move. You just had to, you know, keep your head forward and keep going. But just the feelings I would get being in there and, you know, seeing the lights and hearing people and the you know, what I perceived as the action at the time,
right,
was fascinating to me. So when I, you know, and then I got into innocently, you know, fantasy sports in high school. Right? I think that was really the start of, you know, my own personal gambling. And it was, you know, we did it for money. It was, you know, $10, $15, $20, whatever we could muster up at that time. I started with football, we did baseball, we did basketball as well too, but that was fun, right? Never saw it as anything that would spiral into anything else, but just, you know, habits I started to see signs of things, right? Where even early signs where, you know, I talked about the feelings I would get, but just the urge to keep doing it and talking about it a lot and almost obsessing over, you know, when are we going to do more? When are we going to, you know, when's our next league? Let's do more leagues, you know, let's venture out a little bit. So I started to definitely see some early signs there.
So let me stop you there. When you started to prioritize gambling more than you did, you know, previously in your life, and, you know, fantasy football becomes fantasy basketball and fantasy baseball, were any of your friends riding shotgun to that? Or when you look back on it, was it very clear that amongst your friend group who you were playing fantasy with, or even, you know, the occasional sports wager or visit to a casino, was it clear looking back on it that you processed it different than all your buddies?
Yeah, There was definitely a clear divide for sure. I saw friends of mine that, you know, we talk about this in the room, or, you know, normal gamblers, or I don't know what you would define as that, but could do it in a recreational way, right? Whereas I definitely was showing signs of not being able to do that. I did have within my friend group one or two other friends who also had compulsive behaviors, and you know, one of them to this day is not in program, but is a compulsive gambler and you know, doesn't face it, but you know, not somebody who's very present in my life anymore for obvious reasons. But yeah, could definitely see that there was something that I possessed that wasn't normal, wasn't right. But I think, like we all do, especially at a really young age, you ignore it, right? And I, you know, fed it even more, right? Which was a disaster for me. So
how old were you when this was happening?
This was 16 to 19 years old.
Okay. So did you have a job, like an after school job? Did you get an allowance? What were you doing financially to support, you know, a fantasy football season, a random wager with a buddy, that kind of thing?
Yeah, I had a part-time job all the way through high school. Had a couple of jobs, worked a decent amount. Yeah, definitely got allowance as well too. That was wherever I could, you know, muster up the money to do these things, I would, right? And instead of, you know, saving money, like I knew was a smart, responsible thing, because I was working and I was, you know, spending a lot of energy making money. I just saw it as a, you know, way to continue to fuel, right? So the more I work.
Let me stop you there for a second. And I'll tell you why I'm stopping you there, because there's a lot of young guys I counsel who are in between, like, you know, 18 to 23 years old. And what's amazing, most of them are, you know, really good kids, blue collar family, hardworking. And what's amazing about why I asked you that question is because you were working. You, whatever after school jobs you had, you were making some amount of money, limited money, obviously, at that age, but some amount of money. And what I'm finding with younger guys is that you recognize how hard it was to earn the money. So you had a value of money. You understood the value of a dollar. And when you were going to buy a pair of sneakers, you understood the value, and maybe you weren't going to buy Jordans because they're too expensive. Or if you went out, you know, you're not going to order the steak at a restaurant, too expensive. But specifically in the world of risking money on a gamble, the value of money flew right out the window and it didn't matter. And I wonder if that was the same for you.
Yeah, absolutely. The way I grew up, the way I was raised, you know, had a value to money, right? You know, knew the worth, knew, you know, the importance of saving and building and, you know, doing the right things, but also enjoying things as well. But yeah, when it came to gambling, I had absolutely no value of money whatsoever. I looked at it as another bet, right? I looked at it in terms of, I would have no problem putting $500. And this is as things progressed, right? This was not where I was putting $500 at that point. But, you know, when I got to my bad point, I would have no problem putting $500 on a game. But when I would go to, you know, the restaurant, I would be particular about what I would order, right? Yep. But when it came to gambling, there was no, it didn't seem to matter what the dollar amount was.
Yeah, let me explain that to people who are not in our world but are listening to this, or maybe have some connection to other addictions. You know, when you order a steak at a restaurant, that steak can't produce income. But the thought process is, I'm so good at handicapping a game or playing cards or whatever the case may be, that I'm willing to risk the $500 because I might make $500. And that's kind of the divide in our brains, which becomes completely irrational. At the height of your gambling addiction, walk me through what a day in your life, a week in your life would be like from a standpoint of all the energy you spent on thinking about it, doing it, reacting to it. Like, how bad was it? What was your moment, your day like?
Yeah. So I was a closeted gambler, right? When I got to my really, really bad point, It wasn't the casinos anymore that was the issue. It wasn't fantasy sports. It was what's becoming an epidemic out there for young people, and hopefully I'll get a chance to touch on that later. Mm-hmm. But it was the online stuff, right? And I got hooked up. A friend of mine was a was an agent and got me set up with a an offshore account, and it was like Monopoly money, right? And it started really small, but yeah, in my height of it, kept it very secretive, kept it very private, almost lived a double life, right? My day-to-day life was very normal, right? I was married. I had two young kids at the time. I was in my, my late 20s, owned a house, was seemingly building a good life, but behind the scenes, I was a wreck. I was a disaster. My day-to-day was get up at 4 a.m., bet on tennis for however many hours it was on. Tennis became a really big problem for me because it was on all times of the day. And I thought, with some of the odds that were out there that, like you said, oh man, this is, and there was like a couple of weeks where, I did do okay. Right. But like, what that leads to, like, winning in gambling when you're a compulsive gambler is just a loan for future losses, right? Because you're just going to go back and use it. So, my day-to-day was getting up, gambling, taking care of my kids, getting them off to school, gambling while I was doing that, going to work. I had still fortunate to be with the same company, have a good job, have built a really good career for myself. I've been with the same company over 20 years, again, behind the scenes, I would get into work, made sure I had my bets lined up, checking them throughout the day. Just my, it was a financial problem, right? It always is a financial problem. But the way my brain was operating, the way I was operating on a daily basis was so unhealthy. I was putting my time and energy seemingly into my family, into my job, but it was minimal effort, right? It was, what's the bare minimum that I can possibly do to be a present dad, to be, continue to perform well at work and gamble all day. The second part to it,
let me stop you there for a second. Sure. We'll take a real quick break. I want to hear, the rest of this. It's important. And we'll talk about, how the jig was finally up for you, but we'll continue on in just one second on Hello, My Name is Craig.
Back to more of Hello, My Name is Craig on The Fan with your host, Craig Carton, and supported by the Council on Compulsive Gambling of New Jersey, 800-GAMBLER.
Welcome back to Hello, My Name is Craig. Happy to have Vinny joining us telling the story of, his compulsive gambling, now 3 years plus into recovery, which is awesome. Vinny, when we took the break, you were talking about the balance of your addiction to gambling and trying to be a good dad, a good husband, a good worker, etc. One of the things people don't understand is how we become world-class liars and world-class hiders of our gambling behavior. And while there are people close to us frequently that know there's something up and will question us about it before, the poop hits the fan and we have to go get help and get ourselves into recovery, what was it the same for you? Like, did your wife ever come to you and say, this isn't the guy I married. What's going on? You seem distracted or distant or any of those types of things. Or did she know that you gambled and wasn't concerned about it because you were able to hide it so well?
Yeah, she never, I've been married twice, right? And it's been two separate situations both times. I'll actually talk about both if I can. My first wife, who I was with, at the time where I was talking about my, my real height, she never approached me on it ever. And I say in my therapy, when I go to my meetings, that like I saw it as a great thing at the time, but, and it gave me the leash to just keep going. Right. There was nobody that was stopping me. But I wish that she did, right. Like, it would have saved me a lot of time and a lot of years, to get ahead of it at that point. But she didn't, and she had her own stuff going on too, that led to us not being married. It had nothing to do, seemingly with me being a compulsive gambler, maybe it did because of my behaviors, the way I changed, but she just never expressed it. I don't know. Maybe one day, you know, we'll have that conversation as part of my, you know, making amends in the program, but I'm not there yet. But you know, when I remarried the second time, that was where I got my wake up call. And, you know, right away, as we shared finances and, you know, we're doing, you know, doing the whole thing together, you know, she right away was like, what, you know, what's going on? Where's our money? What are these charges? What are these withdrawals for $10,000? And, yeah, so that's really where, the jig was up for me at that point.
So typically, not everybody, but typically there's that, you know, kind of full tilt moment. There's that last gamble, the last wager when, you get caught, maybe you broke the law, police come knocking at your door, where you can't help but, you know, acknowledge, yep, you got me. I've been gambling and I need help. Not everyone has that, but the far majority of people do have that kind of one last story of, you know, what was the last wager and why was it the last wager? And I'm wondering for you, do you have a bottom of the barrel moment where you went crazy one night, you got caught, you lost a bunch of money, you made bad decisions? What for you was the reason for your last wager? Is there a story around it?
Yeah, it was a culmination of a lot of years. There was not one, you know, moment in particular. There was a moment about 8 months before I had my final moment and decided to surrender and you know, go seek help, where, you know, I had a conversation with my wife. I admitted, like, for the first time ever that I thought I had a problem, or admitted that out loud to somebody else, and that I thought I needed to get help. Unfortunately, like, she forgave me too quickly, and I didn't go and get help. And again, could have saved me another, you know, almost a year of heartache and financial strain, but just wasn't ready yet. Wasn't ready to grow up. Wasn't ready to give it up. And then in January of 22, right before I came into the program, I was about $80,000 in, you know, in debt between credit cards and you know, my bookie and things like that. So it was really, and I was getting to the point where, you know, she knew that I had an issue, but I was hiding this next week, right? And as soon as, you know, that came out, I knew it was going to be, you know, it was going to be it. It was going to be game over. It was going to, you know, come like an avalanche. And January of 22, everyone, you know, I had, everyone got COVID in the house, and I was still gambling, and, you know, we were locked in for 2 weeks. I was $80,000 in the hole, and I still got up each day, you know, sick as a dog, kids sick, wife sick, and still continued to gamble and dig a deeper hole for myself. And, you know, within that 2 weeks, the jig was up. She found out, you know, more, and I almost wanted her to find out at that point. And, you know, once she found out, you know, I put it all out on the table, which was like a moment where, you know, it was, even though it was the, you know, rock bottom, so to speak, to get like everything out there and feel that I had a, you know, there was nothing I was fighting anymore. It was actually a very liberating feeling. And I still remember that, you know, three and a half years, but, you know, still remember it really clearly. And, you know, at that moment she said, like, you need to go get help, and, you know, you need to go to therapy, you need to go to meetings, or, you know, it's going to be the end of, you know, can't stay if this is going to continue.
Yeah. So, for a lot of people, I didn't want to, you know, it's counterintuitive, but the day that, whatever term we want to use, the day you get caught, the day you get out of, the day, you know, a wife, a spouse, a, you know, someone in your life that you do respect and care about finds out, well, for most of us, that is kind of the worst moment of our lives, because all the secrets, all the lies start coming to the surface. But at the same time, you use the word liberating, and you're right. There's an aspect of relief almost that comes over us, because once we're quote unquote caught by whomever it is that catches us, all of a sudden, you know, life becomes, in a weird way, a little bit easier in that moment, because now you can be honest and start talking about it, and, you know, everything comes pouring out. Not all at once, but it is one of those moments, not in the moment, but when you look back on it with clarity, now that you're 3+ years, I'm 7 years into my recovery, that moment, which was the worst moment ever, was also very liberating, because it allowed me to stop lying and stop hiding, you know, all this crazy behavior that I was involved with. Before I let you go, you know, you're still a young guy and you're in the meetings, and I always try to end the show talking about the kids or the young people or anyone listening now that is where you were 3 years ago, still gambling, recognizing they got a problem, need help, not sure what to do financially, the burden's crazy, the walls are kind of, you know, caving in on you, and you're not sure that you can get to recovery, or you can't imagine life without gambling. When you speak in those GA rooms and a new guy comes in, what advice do you give the guy that's at step one of this long process?
Yes. I mean, step one is you got to stop digging, right? Like a lot of people come in, even the young people now. I mean, the room that I go to, I don't know if I can shout out my Massapequa room on Long Island, but, you know, the room that I go to, we built from when I walked in there 3 years ago from 4 guys. Now we have over 30 that come on a weekly basis. And I'm in my late 30s. I actually feel like one of the, you know, when I walked in, I was the youngest guy by a lot. Now I feel like one of the older guys. There are guys coming in 18, 19, 20, 21 years old, already in, you know, financial trouble, already getting in trouble with the law, with families, with, you know, ruining relationships, jobs, getting kicked out of school. So my step one advice is stop the digging, you know, it's gotta stop somewhere. Right. And that, you know, that day you make that decision to stop burying yourself and start moving in the right direction, you know, is a good day. And it's the only way that you can get going on this journey, you know, as you look to stay clean. But, you know, also like to talk about, you know, filling the time, finding positive habits, because one of the, you know, positive outlets, like one of the issues for me was like, what am I going to do? I had kids, I had a family, so obviously I had things to fill the time, but, you know, what am I going to do to not only fill the time, but fill my mind, fill the void, right? Early on, especially, like, I wanted to still gamble, and that's as sick as it sounds. It took a while to retrain my brain, right? I was so just deep in it that to eliminate it was hard, and it's still not eliminated, right? Like, I still think about it. I still get urges, but knowing where I'm at, you know, this 3.5 years later, I have a strong desire not to gamble anymore. I know what it did to me, and I know what it could do to me if I continue to do that. So as new people come in, I've been sponsoring some young guys that come in. We, you know, we work the phones a lot in the room. So we built like a strong core group of people. We go out to dinner a lot. We do things, and it's helped the young guys as they come in that we're able to, build a little bit of camaraderie and give them an outlet and a place and people that understand them and that they can go to and really rely on.
Well, I think it's awesome. And I think it's great that you share your story and come on this show and are a big part of your room out in Massapequa. And keep doing what you do, man. It's great. It's great. You're a beacon of hope for younger guys. And, you know, we need more guys in their 30s to talk to kids in their 20s, because you can relate. You know, I'm 56. So if I talk to a 19-year-old, there are times it's like their dad's talking to them. But we do need younger people like you who have gotten into recovery successfully and have stayed there to keep talking to younger guys, because there's going to be a lot more dudes, unfortunately, that are coming through those GA doors, because so many more people are gambling now. And I can't thank you enough. I hope I can return the favor one day. Really appreciate your honesty and you sharing your story. And I'm glad we have people like you out there. So keep doing what you're doing. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. And thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks, Craig. Really appreciate it. Hopefully we can get you out to the Massapequa room one day.
I'd love to do it. We'll stay in touch. Have a great weekend. Thanks so much.
Awesome. Thank you.
Bye-bye. I can't say how much I appreciate Vinny coming on and everyone that has shared their stories into what, year six, I think, now, right? We're in? Of Hello, My Name is Craig. We'll keep doing it as long as you allow us to do it, and really appreciate you listening to shows like this. And while I'm not going to be the sky is falling, there are thousands of more young people in our neighborhoods who are now having a problem with gambling, and hopefully you will encourage them to listen to shows like this and get help. Appreciate you listening to Hello, My Name is Craig.